last time that Deborah Heath was in the studio, and Deborah Heath, you remember, is a writer and a musician and a performing arts educator. That's a summary of some of the activities that she's involved in. We were talking about the short story competition, which she helped to set up and organise and judge within the St Albans Lit Fest. And we enjoyed recording those stories and having a chat about them. Now, today she's come here to talk about a book by an author we all know, Roald Dahl. And I'm going to ask you why you chose Boy. I mean, he's famous for lots of different things.
I've chosen it because we're in his centenary year. Everyone seems to be buzzing talking about Roald Dahl. He's all over the place. He was in the Library Children's Challenge over the summer. My children are absolutely potty about him at the moment. My older one has gone through a list of it's about 20 books, and he's ticking them off as he goes. So he's very much in the ether at the moment. As a child myself, I actually didn't like his books very much, apart from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and this book, Boy, which I first read at 11, and it's just so many parts of it have just stuck with me all through my life, little bits I can just quote. And I think now, although I didn't like him as a child because I found his stories really weird and disturbing, now as an adult, I'm able to appreciate them more. I know tales of the unexpected, and having read Boy, I can understand why his stories are a little bit peculiar and macabre. So I have a great admiration for him. And a point that might be very relevant to some of your listeners, Rob, is that he was actually blind for a few months. I read this in Going Solo, which is a sequel to Boy. So now I feel I've got something I share with Roald Dahl particularly. So I have a lot of respect for him, and it's just, I think it's a marvellous book.
You've mentioned it's 100 years, 1916, that he was born. Mm. And Boy really takes us through his childhood and, yes, and into the later part of his childhood. He didn't start out writing for children, he started out writing for adults.
In Going Solo, I think he mentioned his first piece of writing that he was paid for was an account of a terrible accident he had in the RAF, the one that actually ended up with him being blind for several months. And he was a little frustrated because he was trying to write an account and they put a twist on it to make it sound like he was shot down as a brave soldier. I think I'm right in saying that was his first piece of paid writing work. So that would have been in the mid-40s.
Yes, and then in the 40s and 50s he was writing a lot of short stories and really didn't come to children's literature as we know it. And Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and
Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator is the second one. And I recently found out there was going to be a third, Charlie and the Great White House. But he only wrote a couple of chapters, decided it wasn't very good, and chucked it away.
Okay, so Boy takes us more or less from his birth, and yep, we discover that he's actually Norwegian.
His father came from Norway, where before he came to England, he lost an arm in some terrible accident, came over with his wife. They had two or three children. Then the wife died, I think in childbirth, but certainly the child was very young. He very quickly remarried another Norwegian lady, who then went on to have three or four more children. So Roald was one of a very large family where the children were very spread out in age. So he refers to his ancient half-sister who was 12 years older than him or something. So his parents were of Norwegian origin and they used to go back there for every summer holiday, but they felt very English and had a lot of respect for the English school system.
Because his father had this terrible injury which led to a misdiagnosis. I mean, we're talking about the 19th century and that misdiagnosis meant that the doctors or the medical, whoever it was responsible, I can't remember, instead of solving the problem, actually destroyed his arm.
Yeah, amputated.
And he had to have it amputated because he'd been destroyed. And I think surgery plays a part in Dahl's thinking as well, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. At a young age, I believe, one of his lovely holidays in Norway, his mother said, "We're just going to the doctor. It shan't take a minute." And the poor boy, who must have been about 8 years old, had his adenoids removed with no anaesthetic. How horrible. There's another account of his boarding school days where a boy had a boil lanced by surprise when the doctor threw a towel in his face to distract him. His sister, his ancient half-sister, had her appendix removed on the nursery table. It's just, this is how things happened then, but goodness me, a lot of them seem to have happened to Roald and his family.
It's quite a short book, and yet he gets so many horrible incidents into it. But it is nonetheless amusing, it's engaging, and it's not quite as horrible as it may seem, but it's a mix of the real life.
Yes, indeed.
In fact, they lived in Wales in the beginning, because his business was all about shipping and so on, and he was looking for somewhere where there was a lot of coal.
Yes, and a port or something.
And that's why they got into South Wales. And it was there, presumably, that the tragedies began to arise in his family.
Yes.
Because there was the death of a sister.
There was a death of a sister, which he touched on. Also, he then, as a parent, went on to lose some of his own children, which must have been terrible, having to lose so many people close to him. But I suppose it happened in those days. As we'll probably discuss later, the medical system was very, very different to what it is now. And very, very sad. Of course, if his father hadn't lost his first wife, Roald wouldn't have been born, and we wouldn't have had lots of stories.
It should have been an idyllic situation for him, because he had lots of brothers and sisters. They were all well settled, they were comfortably off, they had no money problems. But then, unfortunately, his father also died. The book describes he's never actually got over the death of the child. It was the death of the child that made him lose the will to live, as it were.
Yes, heartbroken. So his mother, goodness me, had her own very young children, had to be a stepmother, and just had to get on with it. I've got a lot of admiration for her. He had a great sense of family, Roald Dahl, and I think if you look at his first boarding school, he speaks about how important it was to always go to sleep facing his family. This was in a school in Weston-super-Mare, and he used to line himself up with the Bristol Channel and make sure that his back was never on his family, and he slept that way every night, I believe, in every school that he was at. He would always face his family. I think that's lovely, don't you?
Less lovely are some of the things he got up to as a young child. The sweet shop incident, well, there's various sweet shop incidents.
Yes, a terrible old Welsh lady who had very, very dirty fingers and nails filled with soil that she would thrust into jars and bring out bootlaces and gobstoppers. Gobstoppers, you notice, this will come out in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Because the description that he gives of this woman, I think it was Mrs. Pratchett.
Pratchett, yes, Mrs.
Like
Pratchett.
It was quite indicative of the sort of characterisation that he would develop later.
By far the most loathsome thing about Mrs. Pratchett was the filth that clung around her. Her apron was grey and greasy. Her blouse had bits of breakfast all over it, toast crumbs and tea stains and splotches of dried egg yolk. It was her hands, however, disturbed us most. They were disgusting. They were black with dirt and grime. They looked as though they'd been putting lumps of coal on the fire all day long. And don't forget, please, that it was these hands and fingers that she plunged into the sweet jars when we asked for a pennyworth of treacle toffee or wine gums or nut clusters or whatever.
He's obsessed with sweet shops. My son brought home a book called The Giraffe, The Pelly and Me, which is a lesser-known Roald Dahl story. It's all to do with the sweet shop and the signs outside the sweet shop. So I think he was obsessed with chocolates and sweeties, wasn't he? But this horrible, horrible shopkeeper always had her evil eye on Roald and his friends when they went in, and they decided to get their own back on her one day when they found a dead mouse, and they thought it would be a very good idea, or Roald himself thought it would be a very good idea, to give her a shock, to put it into a jar of sweets and see what happened.
He went through lots of different schools, I mean, and they got up to various things, as you say.
Yes, and getting caned. I think that was the first time he was caned. First of many times.
Yes, that's an element that runs right through chapter after chapter, being caned.
He had a more interesting experience at his next school. He also got caned a fair bit then, but I think he had some wonderful experiences there, certainly in terms of fodder for his writing. There's a wonderful story about him walking in on a matron in the throes of a romantic entanglement with one of the masters. And it's nice to have these little pockets of humour throughout what would be a rather disturbing book.
It could well be quite disturbing, because there's so many descriptions of teachers beating young children endlessly, and Dahl is either being beaten or watching somebody else being beaten, and one of the ones that beat him ended up as Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yes, I think he was Bishop of Chester and then Bishop of London, and then he became Archbishop of Canterbury.
I think he was the one that crowned the Queen. And he describes very well this man, and he poses questions about the man and how he came to be such a well-known religious leader.
Then the instrument of torture was put once more upon the table, and a box of matches was produced. A match was struck and applied to the pipe. The pipe failed to light properly. A fourth stroke was delivered with the lecture continuing. This slow and fearsome process went on until 10 terrible strokes had been delivered. And all the time, over the pipe lighting and the match striking, the lecture on evil and wrongdoing and singing and misdeeds and malpractice went on without a stop. It even went on as the strokes were being administered. At the end of it all, a basin, a sponge, and a small, clean towel were produced by the headmaster, and the victim was told to wash away the blood before pulling up his trousers. Do you wonder, then, that this man's behaviour used to puzzle me tremendously? He was an ordinary clergyman at that time, as well as being headmaster, and I would sit in the dim light of the school chapel and listen to him preaching about the Lamb of God and mercy and forgiveness and all the rest of it. And my young mind would become totally confused.
There's another teacher he speaks of a lot to. A poor man, he got shell shock in the war and it is very, very jittery. And they're very unkind to him. Roald isn't a perfect child, he's unkind to a few people, but it is usually justified, like in the system of murder mysteries, you know, in Agatha Christie books. There are some terrible murders, but they always happen to people who thoroughly deserve them. And I think Roald has a great sense of right and wrong and people getting their just desserts. And I think that certainly comes through in his writing. And he speaks very, very sadly about a time he was unjustly accused of cheating in prep, and all that happened was he broke his nib, and this really had a very bad impact on him at the time.
He also comes back to chocolates at a later stage, doesn't he? Tell me what's going on here.
I think this is one of the highlights of his childhood, and this was in his last school, where the Cadbury's people, really the children, became quality assurance officers. They would send in samples of new exciting chocolate bars. They would ask these poor boarding school children to eat the bars and let them know what they thought about them. That's absolutely marvellous. And it's an obvious link to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It probably developed Roald's sense of style as a writer, even just beginning with reviews. But I think that must be absolutely marvellous. That is one of the aspects of this book that has stayed with me that I've remembered ever since I was 11. One of the reasons I wanted to read it again. And it's a section that my own children are very excited about.
For me, the importance of all this was that I began to realise that the large chocolate companies actually did possess inventing rooms, and they took their inventing very seriously. I used to picture a long white room like a laboratory, with pots of chocolate and fudge and all sorts of other delicious fillings bubbling away on the stoves, while men and women in white coats moved between the bubbling pots, tasting and mixing and concocting their wonderful new inventions. I used to imagine myself working in one of these labs, and suddenly I would come up with something so absolutely unbearably delicious that I would grab it in my hand and go rushing out of the lab and along the corridor and right into the office of the great Mr. Cadbury himself. "I've got it, sir," I would shout, putting the chocolate in front of him. "It's fantastic. It's fabulous. It's marvellous. It's irresistible."
Looking at the sort of extracts that we've pulled out, the sweet shop, the character in the sweet shop, the character of the bullying teachers, or the teachers who didn't realise it was bullying at the time, didn't realise it was abuse. All of these clearly play a part in his life. He says in the beginning of the book, this is not autobiography.
It makes me think about a module I did when I was a drama student about autobiography and performance, and I think we can relate this to written autobiography as well. And we have to ask ourselves, what is autobiography? Is it more authentic if you're reading an autobiography, or a collection of someone's letters or their diaries, or perhaps an autobiography that is peppered with these throughout? The problem with autobiography as a concept is that we never really know what's true and what isn't. And indeed, the writer may remember things incorrectly. Yes, it might help to have your diary entries. And he does say himself, "I can't remember the name of this child," or "I can't remember the name of this teacher, but he was an ugly devil," you know, that sort of thing. I feel Roald Dahl is being fairly honest, because he doesn't always paint himself in a good light. I couldn't recount tales in this way. I have kept some diaries from when I was at school, you know, just in case I become very, very famous. I can remember a few funny stories, but not to this extent. It's extraordinary. He wrote this, I think, when he was about 60. Very good memory. So he doesn't call it an autobiography. Does he call it an account of his childhood?
He says that he'd never write a history of himself. None of the things that happened to him are important, but each made a tremendous impression. He didn't have to search. All I had to do was skim them off the top of my consciousness and write them down.
Well, he was quite a humble person, wasn't he? He's never boasted very much about his writing. He lived in quite a simple situation, really. He wrote every day in the same old chair in a very dusty old study. An amazing chair, mind you, that he'd had made specially for him, with a sort of lap tray that would pull across. I don't know if you've ever seen it in his museum. But yeah, he wasn't a boastful person. So I think he'd never understand why people would particularly want to read his autobiography. He just hopes it might amuse them and divert them, which it does. So to my mind, it's a good introduction to autobiography for children. And it is very much aimed at, I would say, the 9 to 15 age bracket. We can enjoy it as adults, but it's very accessible and very relevant to that age group.
It didn't strike me that it wasn't also a book for adults because there's a lot of social comment in there. There's a lot of things that one thinks about. The first time I read it, I thought, I don't know, is this really particularly profound? I actually went back to it and looked at it again and listened to it. And I enjoyed listening to it very much, actually, because it works very well as an audio book. And I think it's really more than that. And his second volume, which I haven't read, the second part of his Going Solo, is it? Mm. Yes. What's that? That takes it through to the...
Okay, so this one leaves off at the age of 18 and Going Solo takes it forward. Mainly through the war years. So pre-war years, when he's working in Africa, and there's a wonderful story about a lion stealing the cook's wife. Lots of really funny stuff, some really upsetting stuff. He talks about his harrowing experiences flying solo in an aeroplane. That's where it gets its name from. But it's also about going solo throughout his life. He was out there away from his mother for 4 years. He didn't see his family or speak to them for 4 years. He was absolutely on his own. So that's an amazing book. I think it is even more harrowing than Boy, and I would recommend if anyone's read Boy, they go on to read Going Solo. So that takes him roughly to the end of the war.
Well, I haven't read it, so I didn't know about the lion stealing the cook's wife. I mean, that is straight out of Roald Dahl Horrid Tales or something, isn't it?
It is. It's marvellous. He does have a macabre side, but he also has a superb sense of humour.
Deborah, thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome.
Our thanks to Calibre Audio for providing us with a CD from which we could take those extracts. Boy by Roald Dahl was read by Tony Lister. The music accompanying this edition of the Talking Bookshelf is called Good Times. It was composed and recorded by Goffby of Kenilworth, who's very generously given us permission to use his music.